Hey everyone, Adam D. from Indefensive Ska here. A little note before we start the show. Los Angeles is dealing with multiple catastrophic fires. A lot of people have lost their homes and are in need. If you're able to help, please do so. There are a lot of great organizations you can donate to, like California Fire Foundation, Pasadena Humane Society, Mutual Aid LA, and there's even a list of people in the music industry that have lost their homes. Links are in the show notes for our Rob Harvilla episode. Thanks.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Simply fill in these three pages of your information.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, of course, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. That way, you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Makes it a great way to keep up with your favorite artists. You can discover the new ones. Grab us at any of the usual podcast places, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, and NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget also to give a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired. Those always help out so much. We've had some great guests on lately, including Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam, Beth Ditto of Gossip, actor Skeet Ulrich from Scream and Parrish on AMC+. Maggie Lindemann was here, Guy Garvey of Elbow, comedian Martin Amini, actors Nathan Stewart Jarrett and George McKay dropped by to talk about the movie Femme. Rudy Mancuso was here. He stars in Musica on Prime Video. Hamish Linklater as Abraham Lincoln in Manhunts on Apple TV+. And we started April talking with Gary Clark Jr., just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, catching up with Dave Wakeling of the English Beats. There's a new Record Store Day reissue of the Beats' 1981 album, What Happened? We're going to be digging into that. We'll start by talking about tea, actually, apropos to nothing. We're just going to talk about our favorite teas. But then we're going to dig into how he still connects to the dire warning of some of the songs after 40 years of singing them, and what their progressive messages written at the time of women and gay rights opposition still lends to today's conversation, but also how they made these topics danceable while becoming a gateway to genres like reggae to folks who hadn't heard the genres before. Dave's also going to talk about feeling boxed in by the ska movement of the time, writing the theme to She's Having a Baby with writer-director John Hughes, and why he doesn't think he would release the new songs that he's been writing currently. Dave's also going to discuss keeping his tickets and merch prices low against present industry practices, playing with Vampire Weekend at the Hollywood Bowl, and how the industry has turned back into a singles market instead of the albums that he grew up listening to. All that and more, we're talking What Happened? It's Kyle Meredith with Dave Wakeling of the English Beats.
Hey, Kyle, how are you? Three interviews a week. So you must see patterns. You see patterns in the way people respond, the way people perhaps avoid. I wonder if you found any current themes that run through, apart from the glaring narcissism that we all share. The only thing worse than being a narcissist pop writer is a journalist who follows them around. That's really weird. But anyway, have you found any common threads with doing that many interviews?
It's interesting. They're the obvious ones. Like, some people do want to talk about AI these days, and that's been going on for the past year. Although that's sort of to tail off a bit. But I find the most interesting theme that a lot of musicians are talking about, because I also talk with film and, and TV.
Actually, I see. Yep.
But the musicians is, broadly, I'll say, space and the universe. And I've got my own theories on this because, it's a form of escapism and it's isolation. So as we have lots of things going on in the world, there's, sort of that, how far away can I get from here? But, and not just post-pandemic, but just sort of this, isolated digital world that we find ourselves anyway. I think there's a lot of that go hand in hand, that
Wow. How
so.
interesting. Well, that'll make a good book when you get to the end of it to follow those themes through. Huh.
It'd be nice to have something to come out of all this, other than just great conversation. Maybe that's enough. Great
At
conversation.
least that's all you get. Nice conversations and a cup of tea if you're lucky. That's been my main, there's the records and that we can get onto that later, but I've been preparing my palate to start drinking some fine Chinese teas. And I've done it by going back to my British roots, and I've bought about 20 of the finest tea bags from around the world, boxes of them, not just single tea bags. And I'm going through and I'm starting to prepare my top 10 of British style cuppers with milk. Just in order to see, I watched all these programs on the YouTube, and all I can taste is tea, but they go like, it's apricot. No, apricot pit and slate, but it's wet slate early in the morning. And I'm like, all I can taste is
It's just tea.
tea. That's all I can taste, and it's nice tea or not. So I'm building up for it. At the moment, I'm awaiting a cup of Masters Barry's tea from Cork in Ireland. Barry's Master Blend, which is my favorite at the moment. PG Tips, how are you?
PG tips right here for me. That's what I've got going on at the
I
second.
find it a little empty to start and a little bitter at the end. It's
See, I like the bitter. I like the bitter.
right, you see, it depends what you tipple, doesn't it? Thompson's from Belfast is currently running second. Their signature blend, very good. But I actually find that most of the time I just prefer straight Assam tea without it being a blend of anything. That's the part of a cup of tea, which there's some of that in PG Tips, and they mix it with other stuff, mainly African stuff now. It used to be Chinese, but it's a nice habit and it keeps me off the streets. And I get plenty of exercise because every two cups you have to run to the bathroom, see if you'll make it in time. It's a perfect diuretic, as you
I do know. I'm a very, very big tea drinker, and I've done the deep dives. PG, I'm here in Kentucky, and of course you can get any tea from anywhere, but that's the easiest to find that's of quality that I care about.
Right.
And the green tea, because you have the different caffeines. I mean, you have
Yes.
black tea, and usually I'll start my day with some black tea, hit some espresso in the midday if I need to, and then green tea in the early afternoon.
Oh, to mellow out. Wow. Oh, you're way ahead of me. I'm still quaffing cups. Here comes the Masters. Barry Masters, the master of blending teas. There's even a lovely interview with the chief blender over there in Cork.
We have one tea farm in America because you can't really grow it.
Mississippi.
I think, yeah, is that right? I knew it was in the
Yes, I was
South.
trying to buy some tea from there,
I've
but
never
they're
had
all
it.
sold out.
Yeah, I've never
They're
had it.
more or less sold out, apart from a couple of flavored types, which I'm not keen on, But out of their regular blends, they had about six types going, but they were all sold out when I looked last week. I thought that would be nice. I bought two tea plants. They're only small, but they reckon that you can start picking on them in a year or two. I bought an Assam and a Darjeeling, and I bought a book on how to dry them yourself. So,
That's nice,
wait.
though. Some people made sourdough bread during the pandemic,
Yeah.
and we've all got our hobbies. You let me know how that goes. I've never grown one. I'll be
Yeah.
interested to hear how that goes later
I
on.
will. Yeah. I don't know whether it's just going to be purely decorative and I look at it whilst I drink somebody else's tea, but there's always the promise of it, isn't it? I think it'd be nice. It's terribly hot here, of course, in California in the summer, 108, 120. The garden's really off bounds for 3 months or so of the year, which is a shame. Even the swimming pool's dangerous. You get the back of your head burnt, So I built a kind of tent, a sunscreen tent, and I managed to get away with a few plants that can't take the full desert sun. And that's where I hide in the summer. And that's going to be my tea garden with the
That
tea
you know,
trees.
some people grow weed in the basement, and some people have the tea garden in the
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let's talk a little bit of music. I do love that this has turned into a tea podcast today. I really do. This is unexpected and a pleasure, a delight. But we got you got so the English Beat just did the reissues. I Just Can't Stop is already out. What Happened is on its way on Record Store Day this year.
Yes, Rhino have done a terrific job. And they, I did say when I first met them that I thought that Shout Factory had done an impeccable job. And he confidently said, you wait till you watch Rhino. And I said, I'm watching now. But I got to say, both releases not only look great, but they sound great as well. Which was, that sounds a bit odd to say that, like, wow. But their attention to detail has been very effective, I will say that. So you hold the record, it feels great in your hand, it looks great. It's presented like it's a great record, which is a nice feeling. And even better than that with Rhino, it's presented around and at the same time as other great records as well that are also presented so nicely. So it does make you feel like you're in a special little club, really, of the impeccable releases team.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Dave Wakeling of the English Beats. To get excited, by the way, about anything that you've been dealing with for 40 years, to find new things to get excited about, like, that says something.
Stunning, really, yes, because there have been a number of releases, and most of them have sort of been okay. Some of them have been a bit dire, really. You can tell the difference when somebody re-releases a record, whether there was anybody in the building who heard it the first time round or not. That's an arbiter. Shout Factory had really taken it up a notch, and now Rhino, it looks fantastic. And it sounds better. Their remastering sounds better. I know that mastering has become a real... Well, it's boomed, hasn't it? The opportunities for what you can do. Somebody told me that you can pick the sound of your favourite album and you can go in and tell them, master the album to that EQ then. And they can re-EQ your masters to make it sound like the Prince record without the Prince bit. But the sonic field that it exists in, you can press a button and you can have your record sound like Dark Side of the Moon. It's remarkable.
I mean, I'm not surprised in that, but that is remarkable. And would just, that would be tempting. That would be tempting. Like, yeah, right. Do all those things. I just want to hear it.
I'd end up being like completely conflicted. And no, I want tracks 1, 6, and 7, like Dark Side of the Moon. But track 4's got to be Sgt. Pepper's. Dave, it'll never work. Trust me on this. I'm an artist, God damn it.
An artist.
Then I'd go to bed not feeling well and the album would never come out.
So, you know, after 40 years, and you sing these every show.
I do.
Do you find that you can still connect with them in the same way?
Well, yes, and sadly, because too many of them are still pertinent. They were meant to be written as warnings, precautions. Watch out, kids, else this is going to happen. And now it's happened. And I suppose the nicest and the saddest compliment is people come up to me after the show and go, "Cor, blimey, Dave, those could have been written about today." And I'm like, "Oh, well, that was the fear." So it is easy to connect, but it's not always that satisfying. You have to say, the hippie generation and the punk generation, very cleverly thought we were going to do a lot better than our mums and dads, who had only just about managed to stagger out of World War II with PTSD till they've dropped. And sadly, that doesn't seem to be the case at all. All our good ideas, all our extra curricular activities, all our extra access to information, the world's in a worse state than when our parents left us. And that's a bit despondent, isn't it? You know, you get into that phase where you feel like an innate need to apologize to the younger generations. And like, I'm really sorry, this is not what we intended. And we've left you within an almost impossible situation now. And that's not a great feeling. And that makes it even worse that I was standing on the tops of burning buildings screaming about this 40 years ago. Watch out, kids! But I suppose that's the way of the world, isn't it? You know, and everybody thinks the world's going to end in a, you know, in a few years. They've been doing it forever. And they probably will be still thinking the world's just about to end in 1,000 years' time. So at the same time, you do see some evolution, don't you, in the way the world is moving and turning. We get to see a lot of the carnage on the TV screens. That's what sells. But at the same time, there's more women who can read and write in the world than ever before in the history of the world. Now, the fact that that would even need to be a statistic is ridiculous. But the fact that it's heading in the right direction is a decent statistic to remember. So there's stuff that is happening. There's a bit of a backlash now, but at the time when we were making these records, you had to be a bit careful, or gay people still got beat up, like, severely for being a bit too gay in public or something, you know. That's a thing of the past, although there's a backlash, you fear that might be coming back. Racism was quite a lot worse in those days. It's much better now. The younger generations are doing a better job at that. So you do see all signs of progress. People don't get their whole lives and careers ruined over smoking some pot anymore. Now they use it to fund police stations for whole states and schools and stuff. Like the hippies said you could do in 1968, long-haired layabouts. And so there are signs of evolution, but it does seem like the race is on. And I only bring this up because I'm sure, like me, you look at those record sleeves and you know that they changed your perception of the world, and you'd like to believe, as I would too, that those records changed enough people's perception of the world that the world itself could change as a consequence. And if you read the front page of the newspaper, you don't see much of that going on.
I mean, I'd like to think, you know, progress never happens overnight. And there's always a pendulum, that, right? That's a little push and pull. So I'm hopeful. And sometimes it's hard to be hopeful, and sometimes for all very big reasons that we all see, that I get hopeful that, you know, maybe it's this, and if we go back, we're not coming back to here, we're just going back a little bit before we go forward again. Right. And that's how the history of the world has played out over the past few thousand years. So ideally, that's how it will continue. But but luckily, you also do it in a very catchy way. So, you know, at the end of the day, if the news is still bad, you can still sing to it. You got that?
That was the idea. You know, we thought we'd try and put on a party and raise a couple of issues to see if being happy was enough to save the world. And if not, then at least we'd have a good dance right before we went. A scapocalypso was the theme of it. And I think it was driven by the reggae records we loved, because they were terribly happy records. And at the same time, they'd clearly come from situations of quite social deprivation. And so there was a nobility in them, a pride in life, even though life was hard. And that was an element that we wanted to try and combine with our sense of urban angst, the sort of velvet underground industrial noise feeling that you often got in Birmingham, like Detroit, and also the escapism of the perfect 3-minute pop single, which could be anything from what we call Tamla Motown in England, or any of the great 60s singles, Dusty Springfield, all the way through to the Buzzcocks, which made it in 2 minutes 20 seconds, and you had to play the record again the whole way through. You hadn't had enough yet. And that was our idea, really, of trying to approach the situation. Somebody had commented that they wanted it to come across like the Monkees, but John Lennon was writing the lyrics backstage.
You know, it's interesting that you'd brought up, of course, reggae and Motown too, because considering at the time, not everybody had access to great national or world, you know, international records. That's what I was saying. International sounds. A band like you and so many others in similar ways, whether we're talking about the Clash or whoever, you were the gateway to people even learning that reggae existed.
Yes, a lot of people told us that. And it came about through the most odd of circumstances. There was only one radio station for England, Radio 1, BBC Radio 1. That's it. If you wanted pop music, they tried a couple of ships off the coast, you know, and it sounded like you were underwater, but you listened anyway. But really, for most people, there was Radio 1. And there was one television show, Ready, Steady, Go, that in the late 60s, early 70s, turned into Top of the Pops. And that was it, one show. So anything that was in the top 20 was played on Radio 1. And the artists that were in the top 20 or top 10 appeared on Top of the Pops. So we grew up excitedly watching the Four Tops, followed by the Kinks, followed by Diana Ross and the Supremes, followed by the Rolling Stones. And we didn't know there was anything odd about that at all. It seemed completely normal to us because those were the songs that were in the charts. Those were the songs that England loved at the time. And it wasn't until we came to America and we realized that music had been separated along certain lines, you know. A young fan came at an early show. We played Tears of a Clown in the set. And she said, do you know somebody's already covered your song, but it's really slow. You can't dance to it at all. And it was the first time that she'd had Smokey Robinson. She was 19 or 20, lived in Kansas. So we didn't realise there was that separation. Now, I'm sure they didn't do it on purpose in England. They did it for cost cutting. Well, just stick them all on the same bloody station. It's all nonsense. Yes, righto. but in a way, it trained a whole generation and gave us a terrific education in it. So the same thing happened all the way through growing up with the American R&B acts and the English pop acts. And the American pop acts, there was never a perception that there was any difference in anything going on. And so we grew up believing there wasn't, which is great because there isn't.
Right. No, I agree on that. And I think it's come back around to that again with a lot of most people listen like that anyway, but especially the younger generation. That's how they picked up.
Yeah.
On
the younger generation have got such access to stuff now. It's remarkable, though.
Yeah, they have all the music in the world all the time.
I'd have never left the house at 14 if that had been an option, probably. Hang on, I'm just listening to some High Life. Wait a second. I've just found this great new group from the Gabon or something.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Dave Wakeling of the English Beats.
You know, so you all do the records and ska happens. Ska becomes the real thing that we're in. Did you ever then feel boxed in by that? People's perceptions of you're a ska artist? Because obviously...
Well, a little bit. I mean, you could have somebody tell you that Save It For Later or I Confess is their favourite ska song ever. And you feel ambiguous at least, you know. Neither of them are ska.
Right.
And neither of them are the best ska song ever either. But you take what compliments come your way. But it is a bit weird. It got used, I think, in America as a catch-all for any of those kind of syncopated bands. That meant it was ska, which is okay. You don't mind, really, I suppose. So long as they remember your name.
Spelled right on the marquee. That's
you know, yes, it's okay. Rather than they go, the English who? No, Beat. But yes, and I think by... the end of the first year in the Beat, we were feeling the straitjacket of it a little bit, which is why this second album went a little bit wider. It was a reaction to everything having to go 1, 2, 3, 4, jang, 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 faster, come on, faster, jang, 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 jang. It's not fast enough, jang, jang, jang. The words are still fitting, it's not fast enough, jang, 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 jang. I used to spend ages at home writing the lyrics, wandering around the room like a poet, you know, and you could say them really slowly and deliciously and get the rhythm of it. And then you'd practice the song, and each time you practiced it, it got 2 beats a minute faster. And in the end, you finished up, and they all sounded like the Auctioneer's song to me. You're a bit behind the beat, Dave. Try it one more time. No, the beat's way ahead of the lyric. Trust me, I wrote it. But there was nothing could be done. You just had to chase the drum. Yeah. Come on, it's dance music, Wakeling. Pick it up, pick it up.
Luckily, it worked out. There's a post Beat song, very famous. She's Having a Baby, which was the title track to the movie. I've known the song forever. And songs come and go in our lives, right? That one came back to me recently. Before I knew that we were going, it was around Christmas time into January. I bet I listened to that song 20 or 30 times in the course of a week. And why? I don't know. Just, man, did I reconnect with that one.
Well, there was the only time it's ever happened to me, John Hughes was just about to have his first kid, and so was I. As it started and as it finished, we both had a kid, and we were discussing the differences and similarities between being a couple with no kids and a couple with a kid. And the conversation ended up as a written thing with the same sheet of paper, and we sent it across the Atlantic 2 or 3 times like a postal chess game. I don't know who ended up with the letter, but I don't have it. So, but anyway, we wrote, so there's lots of different bits from the things that me and John had been discussing. One of the things that had come up was difficult for the man to not be the most important person in everybody's life all of a sudden. Hello. You love your kids like you miss your wife. It's a terribly tough thing for a man to have to say. And of course, it's more to do with your inability to join the team, you know. It's easier for women to become mothers than it is for dads to become fathers, I think. It can be done, but it's more obviously intuitive, I think. Or maybe that's a generational thing, you know. At least we were allowed in the room when the baby was being born. My dad had to stoically chain smoke plain cigarettes before us walking up and down. That was tradition. So small steps, I suppose. But I think that gave the song, and I've heard it a few times recently, and I think that gave the song some extra resonance because it was two confused young fathers talking about the changes in their life. All change, she's having a baby.
It came from somewhere real. I mean, that's always important,
that's right?
What you know.
It came from a real conversation, so I think it carried that weight of that. Now, the initial idea of the song, in my mind, was more Rolling Stones. And he was quite happy with that. John Hughes was quite happy with that. It was kind of the ramshackle Rolling Stone. That's a greasy rock and roll Rolling Stones. And I thought it sounded great like that. And then they did some testing, marketing on the movie, and were shocked to find that it was appealing, if at all, to a much older demographic than all of John Hughes's previous films, which had been 20s and down, and it was now 26 and up or something. They were all in shock. And so they quickly decided that the Rolling Stones was not the right way to go. Boy George was the way to go. And so they drafted in one of Boy George's producers, and we Boy George'd it up, basically, which is another artist that I like. And as they were paying, I was quite happy to hear a Rolling Stones version and a Boy George version. I'd have done a Neil Diamond just to check, but no. They were happy with the Boy George version, and that was what came out.
You can do that now with mastering, you know. That's we could hear the
master that. Yeah, make that sound a bit more like the Rolling Stones, could you? And it was funny because the version, the demo I'd done, the Rolling Stones version, went on and on and on and on into the night. And we finally mixed it at 4 a.m. And the only criticism we got was, well, it sounds ramshackle. It sounds like it was done in the middle of the bloody night. I'm like, ha-ha, got it. You got it.
Nailed it.
Yeah, nailed it.
Love hearing that. I do. Well, fast forward, you know, we get a bit more to the present. And, you know, you of course, you did that record last time we talked was the most recent record you guys put out.
Yeah.
It's now been, I want to say, what, 7 years or so?
Six, I think. But, yeah, probably like that, 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how time flies. And I've got songs for a new record in my head. I've had them growing over these last few years. But I'm reticent. And I'm playing a game with myself at the moment. I'm pretending that these songs are only for me. I've whored myself out quite enough. Oh, I've got a new tune, everybody. Come and tell me how good it is. No, nobody's going to get to hear them except Muggins here. That's my personal select. And I got to tell you, 12 of the best songs I've ever written, especially before I record them.
We'll have to believe you on that.
Yeah. The orchestra in my head has got it nailed. It was a labor of love making the last record. I was terribly lucky because there was a studio that was willing to kind of sponsor me with time by paying the staff fees for them, but not having to pay the whole rental. Otherwise, it would have been prohibitively expensive. And even with the reduced costs that I luckily managed, it about broke even. It sold to the closest of fans, but there was a heartbreaking part of it where even if it was on sale with the older records at the gigs, people who buy the old one and have me sign that, they've got enough songs from me. Now, maybe I could generate new fans that would like new songs as part of their tapestry. But once the people have got a collection of songs of yours from 45 years ago and they love them, they know the words, you can see their faces drop if the second time in the set you go, here's another new one. And they go, oh, really? God, I've just had a piss. All right, well, I'll go and get a drink. Are they going to do save it for later? It's heartbreaking because...
Chris, you could be Neil Young, you know, and you know, you're going to deal with what I give you because, you know, it's for me up here right now.
But somebody had a lovely joke on Twitter about that, didn't they? They had it, Neil Young, it's only love can break your heart. And this guy wrote, just paying $1,300 to watch you sing, it's pretty heartbreaking too, Neil.
Oh, ticket prices, that's a whole conversation.
I don't understand them. I sometimes feel left out. But I don't know how they get away with it. I don't know how their fans don't feel aggrieved, really. But I've always been the other way. I've kept ticket prices low. I think it started in the recession in 2008, around that time. Certain people, in order to stay on the road, were putting the prices of everything up. Clubs were putting ticket prices up. Some clubs were putting the price of beer up as people had got less and less money. And I think the people who did that, a lot of them went out of business. They pushed it too hard. So I decided to go the other way and drop the ticket price and drop the merchandise price a bit. And people seemed to like that more. And so we did terrific business through the recessions. And it's carried on since then. But we've never really gouged. And I see the price of tickets and I'm like, well, nobody's going to buy that. Oh, it's sold out. I'm like, oh.
But for how long? I mean, luckily, there are people like you, like Robert Smith, you know, who went out there and took charge and said, absolutely not. And I really think it's going to have to be the government getting involved because it feels, I don't mean this in a cliche term. It feels criminal. It feels actual.
It does, doesn't criminal. It? You know, and you never like that when it's something around something that you think is kind of sacrosanct. Not necessarily holy or religious in that sense, but there's something about music that it should be messed with in that sort of way. We know there's corruption all around, but it does seem a shame, particularly concerts, because it's where people develop mass consciousness and then they take it home with them. And a great concert can cheer up a whole city for weeks without anybody even knowing it. So I think it's very important for that. And so it's a shame to see it. But I think it's because artists and concerts have become so important to people, they've now made themselves vulnerable to being gouged. You know, is it going to be the last time you see Neil Young? You know, that might be the last time I do it. If I think I'm on my way out, it's like, yeah, $1,000 ticket. I'll play whatever you want. 2 hours. Just scream at me until I play it, and then I'll go home.
I'll get to
it. That'll be a good concert, I think.
I'll quickly mention, too, we'll see you on tour this year, of course, but, you know, you're going to do some shows with Vampire Weekend.
Well, that is stunning, isn't it? Yes, the Hollywood Bowl. The Hollywood Bowl, a great honour to play there. Although, to be honest, to start with, I wasn't sure, because my memory's not great. People would say, you played there before, Dave? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm waiting for somebody to tell me. But it turns out I hadn't, and it is a great honour. And even more exciting for me was that we already had things like the Greek Theatre with Adam and the Ants, the Cruel World Festival in Pasadena, all sorts of big shows that really should have prevented us from being able to accept the show. And how lovely of them. Every one of them said, I'm not going to stand in the way of Dave getting a chance to play the bowl.
Oh, that's
cool. Now, we had to readjust some of the fees just in case anybody loses any ticket sales. But the way the tickets are going, it looks as though they won't be docking me anything and we'll get to play them. I'm told it was direct from the band that we'd been an influence and that they do this quite regularly, supposedly, when they're booking shows. Oh, well, that would be fun. Let's have them. We used to like them when we were kids. And so I think the two bands will sound fantastic together as well. You know, there is something about syncopation. It lifts the heart. I don't know why it does, but it does. Another reason why we can go down great in broad daylight in a festival. We can start at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock and we can get the whole crowd dancing. Whereas other groups, they really need that nighttime and the lights and the drama to build up and then the crowd goes off. But I think it's down to syncopation rather than the songwriting. I'd like to say it was the songwriting. I'll make them dance in the sunshine, watch. But I think it's syncopation. People, even without noticing, suddenly start moving in time with it. It's sort of irresistible. And that was the idea, try and get everybody dancing. And when you're dancing, your mind feels more open. And then try and hit them with lyrics that suggested other ways of looking at things. Not too soapboxy, because my shoes don't fit you and my views don't fit you in the same way, but we both probably got feet, you know, right. Most of us. And so you had to try and find a way, you know, you're on a stage, not a soapbox. You've got opinions, but you can't expect everybody to share them. But you're allowed to share yours passionately and take the blows as they might come, you know. Syncopated music seemed to be the perfect vehicle for that. I saw David Bowie on an interview a couple of weeks ago, and asking him about music, and it stunned me because I'd never heard anybody say what I'd felt. And he said, oh, well, you know, I'm only really interested in music as a vehicle for my ideas and my lyrics. And I was like, exactly. It's like, what instrument would be there? I don't know, marimba. That'll cheer him up, wouldn't it?
Just a vehicle.
So that was it for me, really. The music I hear in my head is to try and set up the situation so that the lyrics can be delivered most effectively, most connectedly, passionately. And compassionately. And then see if anybody will buy the new bloody record anyway. Slaved away for months. Should this be a comma or a semicolon? Doesn't matter.
I can say I enjoyed that record, as I've enjoyed all the records that you've done. And I really do
mean it. It got splendid reviews. And I mean, it did sell some records, but it didn't sell like you'd hoped or it's
all by. And neither are the Stones, by the way. Their new record isn't selling like their old records either.
People have got so much choice at the moment, isn't it? And particularly, you can just buy tracks. I was always a singles person myself, really. I was a singles person. I used to like the record player, big pile of singles on it, and they'd drop, and you'd hope they'd drop at one at a time. And with a bit of luck, the needle would actually get up. Oh, God, you got to get up again. I used to like that. It took me a little while to get used to albums, but then a local group, Led Zeppelin, turned everybody's heads around. No singles, they said. Singles are corny. And I suppose you couldn't get one 8.5 minutes long. So couldn't cut it onto as discs the right size. So all of a sudden, we were for a few years there, no singles from quite a lot of groups. But I always used to enjoy them. And I had thought about releasing some of these new songs and just bringing them out a song at a time or two songs at a time, rather than labouring away with an album and ideas and a sleeve. By the time it comes out, it's a year old anyway. That was a good joke a year ago, that, wasn't it? Before everybody else overdid it. So I might do that, we'll see. But although I'm still terribly tempted to just be spiteful and keep them to myself, there's something really gorgeous about that. You'll have to torture me on my deathbed to hear the last album. Come on, Wakely, you're not getting out of here. What's track three?
I will say, I will wrap up by saying this. I will selfishly hope one way or the other we get to hear those, even just like whatever it is, because...
All right, then, you've convinced me. You've twisted me up. By popular demand, he's back.
I'll take it. In the meantime, what happened about on Record Store Day? Again, everybody can get Just Can't Stop Already right now. Dave, it is such a pleasure to talk to you again. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Lovely. A real pleasure. Plen was right. Sterling character. Lovely chap. Well, lots of love. A real pleasure talking to you. Thank you for everything you do.
And my thanks to Dave Wakeling. The new Record Store Day reissue of 1981's What Happened is out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode and the interview. Please hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. You can grab three interviews sent your way every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Again, please do give the series a rating and or leave a review if you feel so inspired. And then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from They Might Be Giants, Archers of Loaf, Sidney Sledd and the Swarm, Cracker, Ramones, The Rockfords, Wolf Alice, Green Day, The Beatles, Linda Ronstadt, Etta James, and my interview with Mike McCready of Pearl Jam. That's just an example of what you get every weekday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
I raise my cup of Barry's Master Blend.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.